And we are live on Facebook. I am Chris Graham, joined by Crystal Graham, and we're going to talk about the latest in COVID-19 response news in Virginia, and a lot to report on today, Crystal.
There is a lot to report. The governor held another news update today at 2 o'clock. He's been holding those pretty regularly on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Before we get into that, though, Chris, I know you wrote a story this morning about some promising trends related to hospitalizations.
Yeah, and this is at the heart of the reopening strategy. Really, the numbers we were told all along, flattening the curve meant keeping the hospitals in a position to be able to deal with cases as they popped up, and Virginia's done a great job of that. Really, most of the country outside of the New York City metro area has done a great job of that, but Virginia specific numbers we had today, looking at the Virginia Healthcare and Hospital Association website earlier today, 1,504 hospitalized patients, either people who have confirmed with tests to have COVID or people who are being treated for COVID-like symptoms. Their tests are, test results are pending. That number is actually down significantly just Friday. That number was 1,625 on Friday, so a 7.9% decrease just over 3 days from Friday of last week to Monday of this week. And so that number is decreasing. The number, a number that's increasing is a good number. The number of people who were confirmed to have COVID-19 had been hospitalized, have now been discharged. That number is at 3,273 today. It was 2,997 just on Friday. So again, a 9% increase in this case in a positive direction. So Virginia's numbers looking good, and also looking good, the capacity in the hospital system. Again, not just these numbers, but Virginia still with just 21% of ventilators that are in hospitals are being used right now. That shows a lot of capacity if Virginia were to have a surge, which it's not yet, may not have a surge, probably won't have a surge based on the trends we've seen, you know, for the last couple of months. But still, if there were, a lot of ventilators still available, even though ventilators, as we're seeing in other places, maybe not as in demand as we had thought a couple of months ago. Also, the state has a lot of excess capacity in hospital beds. We're still looking at about 25% capacity. And that's with last week, the news that Virginia had, Governor Northam rescinding his executive order that had banned elective surgeries in Virginia hospitals. So now the hospitals have more people that they, you know, would normally have in hospitals for elective surgeries, other treatments, and that kind of thing. And our hospital numbers are still staying well within the ability of the system to take care of patients. So these are all good numbers, and these are at the heart of the moves we're going to be making later this week to start to slowly reopen our economy.
You know, the other thing the governor said during the news conference today was that the numbers are significantly up for the number of tests being performed on a daily basis in Virginia. I know his goal had been to get us to the point of testing 10,000 people per day before things were reopened. And he reported, I think, right around 9,800 people were tested yesterday. Is that correct?
9,801, to be very specific, right? That's, as he pointed out in response to a question, we're 199 away from that 10,000 goal. And with the ramp up just in the last couple of weeks, we were at 3,000 a day just a couple of weeks ago. So the ability to get to 10,000 is not in question. Really, the only question is, you know, will we need 10,000 tests per day? And we're seeing in some states that, some of the more harder hit states up in the Northeast, for example, that had opened up drive-through centers are actually either closing them down or at least closing for longer periods of time, you know, limiting their opening hours because, in some locations, the virus is starting to, I guess, kind of pull back. But we've reached our goals. We're getting very close to that. I think effectively the governor said today in his press conference that he feels like we're at our goal now as far as our ability to test. So these are good things. These are numbers that are at the heart of being able, in the governor's way he's phrasing this, to be able to reopen. We need to have certain metrics in place, and we have them in place.
Yeah, absolutely. And so so things seem to be moving in a positive direction. You know, also on Friday, the governor released much more specific information related to the businesses that are going to be allowed to open up or to, you know, in some capacity operate starting on Friday, May 15th. I thought we'd go over those just a little bit, Chris, if that's okay with you. And then also talk a little bit more about that. One of the things that I noticed when reading over the very specifics related to personal care or hair salon type places, is that, you know, they're not going to be able to use hair dryers or aerosol hairspray, you know, that both people would have to wear masks. You would stay in your car until the person is ready to take you in for appointments. You know, it seems like there's been some very specific measures put in place depending on what type of business you are.
Go ahead.
I was going to just break down to some more specifics related, depending on the kind of business. The governor's office released, or the Department of Emergency Management released a great little graphic that kind of really breaks down what each business is that's allowed to reopen. And I was going to go through some of those, but if you have something to add, I mean, I think the thing is that places are going to be allowed to reopen, but as we said in our last news update, it's going to be very stringent as far as the amount of cleanliness that's required, you know, the cleaning between patrons and things of that nature, something that hasn't always been the case.
Well, I mean, we've been prepping our viewers and listeners on our podcast the last several weeks to the fact that when things do start to slowly reopen, emphasis slowly, you know, it's not going to be just a wide open, we're going to go back to where normal was a couple of months ago. It's going to take some time to get there. And the governor's emphasizing that. As he pointed out today, and as he's been pointing out for the last week or so, you know, this is a three-phased approach. Really, when you call it a three-phased approach, though, phase three really is pretty much wide open. And that's, you know, towards the end of this process. But the first two phases are, it's slower. You know, for example, restaurants, you know, we're not going to have dine-in in this first phase. It's of those restaurants that have the ability to have outdoor seating can have people at 50% of their capacity for outdoor seating, which will be great news for this weekend. The weather forecast for this weekend in Virginia is just breathtaking. You're talking about temperatures in the mid 80s, sunny conditions Friday, Saturday, Sunday, even Thursday, the day before things reopen, you know, temperature in the upper 70s and nice weather. So, you know, it's you know, those places that can't open for outside will. Phase two then allows for some indoor capacity, indoor seating in restaurants. And so, at a percentage of that rated capacity already, retail establishments, non-essential retail establishments can have people come in now, but at 50% capacity. So, you know, we've been preparing our viewers, our listeners for this for several weeks. And so it's not going to be a surprise to people who've been following us closely, really dating back to maybe mid to late March, that things are going to open slowly, but you know, I guess take what you can get, right? I mean, we've been closed for 2 months, and so I think that you know, it's not quite what you expect, but it's a lot more than what you've had lately. So maybe that's the silver lining here.
Well, and the real question will be, which businesses do choose to open up under phase one? Because of course, as the governor has said, these are the minimum guidelines. So other localities, and he specifically mentioned Northern Virginia, may actually choose to open up a little bit slower. But those who choose to follow this guideline, phase one will be opening up on Friday, May 15th, as we said, and this phase will last anywhere from 2 to 4 weeks. So, you know, that we're still looking at a considerable amount of time that businesses will be operating at reduced capacity. Some breweries I've seen post on their Facebook page, you know, these are some of the smaller places, are choosing not to reopen because they're saying, you know, we would only be able to accommodate, you know, 20, 25 patrons. And again, to bring back your staff to get yourself stocked as far as your kitchen is concerned and that kind of thing, you don't want to turn back. So some places are going to wait maybe till phase two to reopen. You know, for restaurants, they're saying, you know, you're supposed to use like single use menus. So they're going to be printed, used one time and thrown away, you know? So there are a lot of specific guidelines. And what I would say is, if you have any questions about that, or you have questions even before you take your family to a restaurant this weekend, the specific guidelines are really broken down. You can get to it on the governor's page. The Virginia Department of Emergency Management posted the information on their Facebook page. And right now we have it pinned at the top of our Augusta Free Press Facebook page as well. As Chris was saying, you know, restaurants can continue with takeout and delivery. Many of them have found great success with that. I've seen our friend at Klein's Ice Cream in Waynesboro said her busiest day was last Sunday, I believe. You know, so she's had a lot of success keeping her drive-through open and moving things through there. I know a lot of restaurants posted on Mother's Day that basically, you know, they either had to shut their phones off or stop ordering, or they sold out earlier in the day. So people are definitely taking advantage of the takeout and delivery for their families. And as you said, those that have outdoor seating capacity can open. They just have to decide if it's worthwhile for them to open at 50% capacity. I've seen businesses like Plaza Waynesboro talk about opening up on Friday, and a lot of your, you know, breweries with more capacity on 151 have talked about that as well. So if you have any questions, I would definitely call the restaurant and check out their Facebook pages for that kind of information. But a lot of things are, you know, are still limited. You know, I mentioned specifically the personal care that's allowed, but there's some questions about that because, you know, it says that only 10 patrons can be in the establishment at any good time, at any given time. I think about like where I go to get my hair done at High Tech in Verona. It's a huge place with, you know, probably 25 or 30 stylists. So that's still, they're going to have to work out schedules to accommodate that as well. And again, I think you have to be the 6 feet apart, and there's, you know, some really strong guidelines for personal grooming, as it's called. And again, it's by appointment only. But private campgrounds can open. State parks are going to have day use available and some overnight in phases. You know, there's the childcare is still open for those that are, you know, working families, people who are requiring that. Gatherings are still recommended at a 10-person limit. So they're even saying when you go to dine at restaurants, that they can't accommodate parties of more than 10 people. So you have to keep that in mind as well, or you have to split your parties up. Also, I'm seeing many restaurants saying they won't actually seat you until your entire party has arrived. And the reason for that is they're hoping that you'll understand that obviously they need to be successful. And as a result of that, they kind of want you to come and eat and not linger for hours as you might have done in the past, because they need to be able to turn over since they're operating at this 50% capacity. And that's why, again, they're saying maybe we won't seat you until your entire party has arrived. You know, fitness facilities are still closed. There had been some indication that they might allow them to open up limited capacities in phase one, but that turned out not to be the case unless there are outdoor fitness capabilities. And I have seen some fitness facilities, even here in the Stanton, Augusta, Waynesboro region, talk about maybe coming up with some outdoor programming. Augusta Health Fitness was one of those who talked about maybe releasing some outdoor fitness options for their members. So, you know, so there are going to be some gyms maybe who try to accommodate some kind of an outdoor capacity to get members, you know, working out. And, you know, entertainment, public amusement places remain closed. And non-essential retail, again, that's open with 50% capacity now in phase one, starting on Friday, May 15th. But you do have to keep in mind with that, many of these retail establishments, of course, have large fire code numbers. So these places could be, you know, pretty full and still be at 50% capacity. We've definitely seen some retail stores, even before phase one goes into effect, counting the number of people who are going in, probably following some national guidelines from, you know, from their corporate headquarters. I know we were in like Home Depot and they were counting the number of people that went in. I think Walmart was doing the same, but then you would also see other places like Lowe's that were not, you know, counting the number of people that went in and out. So it's kind of hard to say. I guess it's different for every retailer.
A lot of this is just common sense, if you ask me, and it's not just for now. I mean, anybody who reads about public health and has read for some time knows that, for example, menus are terrible. Menus in restaurants that are there and used on a regular basis and have been around for years they carry lots of viruses. They carry lots of germs. I don't think that you know, this single use menu idea is, yes, it's more costly for restaurants. It just costs a business. Pass that on to the consumer. Make us pay a little bit more for the meal. But also then, as a result, we're not passing during the flu season. We're not passing germs to each other. We're not passing the flu virus to each other during flu season. I don't see that as a burden at all. And again, to pass the cost on to the consumer. If it makes it so that I have to pay $1.50 for a taco instead of $1 for a taco, my God, I'll pay 50 cents more so I don't have to get the flu next year during the flu season. So,
well, it also may be advantageous when you think about some of these businesses and reopening, you know, knowing that they're only going to be at 50% capacity outdoors, you know, they may be thinking about having different menus anyway, you know, limited menus, you know, some of their staple items, maybe not a full menu as you would normally expect when you go into places. So in that case, I think it could actually be a benefit, you know, to have that simple menu. And again, you know, there's still going to be the takeout capabilities and things like that for people who maybe aren't quite ready, or are, you know, a senior population, something like that. So in a lot of ways, if you've been ordering from places, they're more than likely going to continue that service as well.
Yeah. And the rest of what I'm hearing from you, Crystal, is like, it felt like gloom and doom, like, well, the personal grooming places can only, you know, have to meet these standards. We're talking about the governor emphasized today for a couple of weeks, 2 or 3 weeks. And those businesses that want to open have a 2 or 3 week head start on those that would rather wait. And of course, the head start means you've got to play by the rules that are there. I mean, and this is for everybody's benefit. None of us wants to see the 2 or 3 weeks extended or even drawn back because for some reason, of course, what I'm seeing in all the trends in public health right now, things are moving in a great direction. You know, the virus is under control to some degree, you know, and it's more prevalent in a less dangerous way. Unfortunately, we've seen terrible situations in nursing homes, but outside of nursing homes, largely, you know, this virus is not proving to be as dangerous maybe as we had thought. Nursing homes, it's been terribly dangerous. But so, you know, if we can continue to keep the numbers in control, then we can proceed through these phases. And part of that's going to be playing by the rules. We don't like the rules. Nobody wants these. But in the case of, you know, if we get this and we can get through this process, there is an end date. That phase three we talked about, that where things are largely opened up, that could be 4 to 6 weeks away. I mean, yeah. 4 to 6 weeks from now is early to mid June to maybe later June, but you know you could also be in a situation we thought a couple of months ago that the country might be closed down for a year. So if you tell me that late June things might be open up to a great degree, I'll be very happy with that because the alternative was not that. And so I'm not looking at this as gloom and doom. I mean it's to me. These are reasonable requests being made of different businesses to just make sure that we're proceeding through this process in a slow, reasoned, safe manner. And at the end goal is where we want to be. We want to be, you know, if we can be by the end of June, if we can say, look, all the metrics look great, public health data look great, the hospitalization rates are down, you know, et cetera, then we can open back up. That's where we want to be. It's not a matter of can we be there Friday, it's a matter of can we be there in a few weeks. I think, to me, it seems like this is a very prudent course of action.
So shifting gears just a little bit, the governor moved, you know, Virginia elections until Tuesday, May 19th. Chris, I know there's a critical deadline tomorrow for those who choose to vote absentee.
Yes, there is. Those May 19th elections, they were the local elections. And it's, I think, 51 localities in Virginia. So not every Virginia locality, if you're watching this outside of Waynesboro and Stanton, which is our primary, those are our two primary areas of coverage. There are local elections, city council, school board elections in both Stanton and Waynesboro, and then 49 other localities in Virginia. Those elections were scheduled to have taken place last week, May 5th. They were moved back to May 19th, and then a number of localities, I don't think Stanton has announced this. Stanton has not said, so I guess at this point they're not going to. They're going to use their usual polling locations. I think there might be 5 in the city of Stanton. Waynesboro has 4 polling locations, but the electoral board in Waynesboro has decided if you're going to vote in person, that there's one place, Kate Collins Middle School, will be the one location where everybody in the city who will vote in person will go. That said, yes, it strongly encouraged, but from a lot of different areas, that if you're going to vote in a local election tomorrow, be it Waynesboro, Stanton, anywhere else in Virginia where there is a local election coming up on May 19th, to do so by absentee ballot. But there is that deadline. Tomorrow at 5 o'clock, you have to have your application sent in. So that is key. And we have a note on our website reemphasizing that news today, a press release from the Waynesboro Department of Elections. We just wanted to reinforce that ourselves here at AFP because that is important. We have had a substantial interest in Waynesboro for absentee ballots. It was as of last week, but there were nearly 1,500 requests made for absentee ballots for this upcoming election. We'd like to see a lot more than that, but you have to get that in by 5 o'clock tomorrow, which means you got to get to the post office and get that postmark tomorrow so that you can have that that into the election office.
And I did. So I want to just correct you. So tomorrow, the last date to request an absentee ballot is May 12th, and then it needs to be in the office by 5 p.m. Is that right? So how, I guess I'm confused at how you request it tomorrow and still get it in the same day.
My assumption was it had to be postmarked by that date.
Okay. So, I mean, I know they're saying that your completed application needs to be the Director of Elections by 5 p.m. So it is due tomorrow. It can be sent by fax, email, or by mail. Yeah, I would definitely say that's kind of a critical deadline. And then if you miss that deadline, like Chris said, you can vote on May 19th. I'm sure there'll be, you know, strict social distancing kind of enforced there as well. It sounds like everyone got a postcard in the mail. I know we did. Maybe that went out to all registered voters here in Waynesboro, you know, letting people know to vote at the Kate Collins Middle School versus their designated location. So definitely, if you have any questions about that, you know, touch base with the Waynesboro Voter Registrar. They have a Facebook page, or you can Google them for information on that election. So the other thing I wanted to mention to you, Chris, just beyond voting, is I saw that UVA's president Ryan joined. I don't know if you saw this news or not. I shouldn't just throw it to you, but I'm going to. He joined CBS's Face the Nation this weekend and was talking a little bit about, you know, what it might look like on UVA's campus this fall. But he was also talking a little bit about football this fall and saying that while they hope to be able to play games with fans in attendance, and I know they've been aggressively selling football season ticket packages, he does think there'll be some new sense of normal. Were you able to, did you read anything about that?
I did not, but I don't know that there's anything revolutionary when he says that. I mean, to me.
Yeah. I guess I'm just curious your opinion on that, because you're someone who has been following all sports. And I know we want to talk a little bit about Major League Baseball, about, what you're hearing things might look like for the fall. Do you anticipate it to be, you know, as it has been in past seasons, you know, a packed house? I know we talked about programs, you know, things like that. I'm just curious your opinion on that.
Well, one, I say this, and I'll reinforce this. I say this a lot when we talk about what we know about COVID-19 and the public health response. Literally every hour of every day, we learn something new that makes things look a little better from a public health perspective. And so making statements on May 11th, I'm still thinking that I stopped 2 months ago.
Today is day 60 since you and I officially went into kind of stay at home. It was before the governor made the order, but when you drove home from, I guess, Greensboro, right, on March 12th and March 13th kind of marked our first day at home.
So to finish that point, yeah, you're right, 60 days now. To make that point, what we know every hour of every day is more. We learn more about the public health news. It looks better, a little better every day, every hour of every day. And so to make a statement about what we will be doing in the fall on May 11th and try to have any certainty to that, to me, just doesn't make a lot of sense. I'm not saying Jim Ryan doesn't make sense. I'm saying what we know now, and if you're asked the question, if you're Jim Ryan, president of the University of Virginia, if you're the president of any college or university in the country that plays major college sports, and you're asked the question, you answer with what you know now, but you have to also anticipate that what you know in 4 months is going to be a lot different, a lot deeper understanding of where we are as a nation with this. So what we know now, I mean, if nothing changes between now and September when college football starts, yeah, we will be social distancing in stadiums. I mean, if we have fans in attendance at all, which we probably would, but it will be so with social distancing guidelines in place. I mean, you know, looking at, again, what Virginia's doing. We just talked about this in terms of the three phases of Virginia's slow return to whatever normalcy we might have. We're a few weeks away from phase three of this. And that does presume that, we will have entertainment venues and public venues open, but there will be social distancing guidelines in place for large events. And so if nothing changes, yes, we will have, college football stadiums that will be differently seated. But I can't predict that we won't have some different, deeper understanding by September that would allow us to maybe have more fans in stands. I don't know what the case will be then. If you had me to bet, I would say that I bet we will have more fans in place. Now, that said, I'll be a cynical person now about UVA football. UVA football coming off a Coastal Division championship, an Orange Bowl appearance, but did not sell a game out last year, has not sold a game out for a number of years. I'm not really completely jokingly say that Virginia football fans have been practicing social distancing for a number of years. So it won't be much different in Charlottesville in that sense. But yeah, no, fans want to see sellout crowds. They want to be a part of a sellout crowd. Right now, what we know on May 11th, I don't know that we can presume that we will have 60,000 people at football games this fall, but you know, between now and September, we may advance a lot further than we know right now. And I would be very surprised if I'm hedging here, Crystal.
That's fine. I was talking to the executive director. I bumped into the executive director of one of our local theater nonprofits in the area, over the weekend. And I know one of the things she said is that they may not print, you know, traditional print programs. Normally when you go into a theater, you get a program kind of with everything that's upcoming for the season. And she said, they're probably not going to print those just as a way of not putting more things in people's hands, you know, because obviously, you know, more and more people would touch those things, that kind of thing. And that was interesting. And I think like with UVA, you know, traditionally you're given a program or you buy programs there. That may be something they look at altering a little bit too. So, but I do agree with what you said, way too early to tell. And President Ryan, I'm sure, was going on the best information he had.
To talk specific to the program thing, though. To me, programs are different than menus. A menu is something that, you know, you go to a restaurant, they put the menu in front of you. It's something that's used several times a day over the course of weeks. It's used multiple, maybe hundreds of times, thousands of times. A program, I mean, I bought the program from you. Maybe the person selling it had it in their hands. Maybe someone, you know, unloaded it from a box, but you know, that's not quite a menu. So I don't know. I know UVA, specifically UVA, they've talked about, in fact, last week announced that they will not be printing tickets anymore, but essentially going to a ticketless system. I don't know that that has as much to do with public health as it does with just, it makes sense in this day and age. Why do you need tickets? Why do you need to hand someone a ticket anymore? Crystal, when we go to Nats games, when we go to Nats games last year, we always checked in with the phone. I mean, mm-hmm. You know, you print something out perhaps, but you know, you could check in with the phone. So why not use technology to just make the whole process more seamless? If there's a public health benefit to it, great. From the program standpoint, I can understand it being a more fiscal decision to not print programs. They cost money to print. And then you have to give them to people and that kind of thing. Why not just have people go online and get the information, which is already readily available there anyway. So
I'm so old school. When I go to concerts or when I go to sporting events, I definitely still prefer, even when I fly, I still prefer a printed like boarding pass or ticket or whatever. And I guess, you know, I feel like if I have something in my hands, you know, it's more legit. I know a friend who had gone to a football game out of state, and you know, internet's kind of bad where this particular football stadium is, so they had the tickets kind of like pre-pulled up on their phone, you know, so that they wouldn't have to pull them up again. And it just so happened that their kid grabbed the phone and, you know, closed all the apps. Well, at that point, they were at this point where they couldn't get internet and they couldn't pull the tickets back up. So that particular person had to go find a restaurant that had internet so that they could then pull up the tickets and then go stand in line at the stadium to get in. So, I mean, I'm kind of on that same wavelength. I'm like old school, even though I'm relatively young and you would think that I'd be all hip and down with technology. I guess I'll have to get to that point whether I want to or not, but I've definitely held off on that. I'm definitely one of those old school people that still prefer something printed.
And stadiums need to work, as you know, we are in stadiums a lot during sports seasons. I mean, you know, even though it seems like they make efforts to advance the technology, advance the Wi-Fi availability, they're never enough. I mean, when you're in a stadium of 60,000 football fans, a basketball arena with 15,000 basketball fans, it's still usually tough to be able to access everything you need to, but that just makes it incumbent on those institutions to just, you know, boost their capacities there in that sense. And you know, that it costs more money on that one end, but on the other end, you get the benefit of not having paper sent out, mailed out, and yeah. then And then there's a public health benefit to it as well. So there's a lot of, there's always, everything you do in the world, there's a cost, there's a benefit. You just have to weigh all those.
Yeah, so for everybody who's tuned in, we're going to shift gears here in just a second, but I will just say technology is a funny thing. I can't tell you how many times I've been standing next to someone. We both had a cell phone. We're both on the same carrier, and one of us has internet and one of us doesn't. It's just so crazy how that all works. So that's my little side note of the day. But on to bigger things, Chris. You just received news today that the Major League Baseball has put forth a plan that the owners, I believe, have approved to possibly get baseball back in action as soon as July 4th.
Yeah, you know, there have been a few plans floating about the last few weeks. Most recently, there was one discussed at length that would have actually moved the Major League Baseball's 30 teams from the current division alignment or the league alignments of 15 teams in the National League, 15 in the American League, at least for just this one season, 2020, really three leagues and based on geography. We've gone back from that. Now we're to a back to the traditional National League and American League alignments, a season that the owners have agreed on this. The news reports today all over the sports world. Rob Manfred, the commissioner of baseball, and the owners agreeing on a plan that would start an 82-game season the weekend of July 4th. Largely, the games would be played within divisions. So if you're National League East, for example, our Nats fans, we're Nats fans. You would play the bulk of your games against other National League East rivals, the Braves, the Mets, the Phillies, the Marlins, and the Nats would play each other largely for that 82 games. You would play some interleague games based on geography. So if you're a Nats fan, you would see some games outside of your division. They would largely be the Orioles, a Baltimore team, perhaps the New York Yankees, you know, games of that nature, close geography so that there's limits to travel capabilities and needs requirements. The teams would have 30 players, active players, instead of the normal 26. It's actually normally 25, but this year, going into the season, Major League Baseball had approved a plan to add a 26th player to the active roster. And so you would go from 26 to 30 with a then 20-player taxi squad, as it's called. Normally, teams have a 40-man roster, as it's called, where those 40 people are protected and they're considered part of your major league roster, even though only 26 will be active at any one time. This would allow for, you know, because minor league baseball largely would not start up. The minor leagues would almost entirely under this plan be extended, what's called extended spring training. Teams would have players at their spring training facilities, both in Florida and Arizona, training perhaps to be eligible to be added to that 50-player roster, the 30 active roster, the 20-person taxi squad. This is all for injuries. Baseball is a sport that's played every day. There's a need for extra players just in the event of short-term injury issues and that kind of thing. And so all that said, then both leagues would have the designated hitter rule in effect for this year. National League has not had it. The American League's had it since 1973. This year, at least for 1 year, it would be uniform across all of baseball designated hitter. I'm trying to think. There's one other big bit of news out of this would be that there would be 14 teams in the playoffs, seven per league. The way that would work would be three division winners, East, Central, and West, and then four wild cards instead of the normal two. And there are different ways to play out those playoffs from there. So also, at least presumption would be no fans in attendance. That's the current proposal. And then the revenues will be split 50-50 between owners and players. And that could be a bone of some contention just because players have been signaling, the Major League Baseball Players Association has been signaling that they would like to see contracts prorated for the season. So if it's an 82-game season, that's roughly half the season. They would like to see players compensated based on a prorated season based on the current salaries. What Major League Baseball owners would like to see is a 50-50 split, and then the apportionment would then go from the percentage of player salary relative to the entire team salary. That's some stuff. Maybe that's a little too inside the inside baseball, too deep in the weeds there for a lot of fans. But that, if there's any holdup to an agreement on this, it would be there. But both sides want to get to work. Both sides want to make money. The players want to make money. The owners want to make money. And so we can probably see some news on that maybe later this week, perhaps as early as tomorrow. But later this week, I would presume that we'll see some movement in the direction of The first step would be spring training starting, continuing or picking back up as early next month, a 3-week training period. Then we start playing baseball around July 4th.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I get what you're saying about the salaries. And I know, obviously, you know, the players, they work hard to get, you know, the amount of money that they're promised in a contract and that kind of thing. So it's hard to say that they shouldn't get anything but that prorated amount. But when they're not able to open the stadiums to fans, the amount of money I imagine that is lost is pretty significant on the team owners. So I'm hoping that there is some understanding by the players in that respect, and that they're willing to play for what could be, you know, quite a reduction, you know, in their salaries just to get the season moving.
Well, time will tell. To jump on that point, one issue that's been existing in baseball from an economic standpoint, and this has been going on dating back to the 80s when the first player strike, I think it was 1981, the first player strike. Major League Baseball executives, owners, the team management have been resistant. Actually, this is across the sports landscape. They've been resistant at a full accounting of what the revenues generated by the business are. And so it's not just a holdup on the player side. There is a little bit of a pushback perhaps from the owner's side too. What counts as baseball related revenue? Is it just TV contracts and ticket sales? Is it also food sales and jersey sales and parking and other incidentals? And so I don't know that we're going to see that resolved this week. I think it's, you know, it's going to come down to 50-50 is probably a fair split, and it's going to be hard for the Players Association to turn that down. And yeah, they're going to make less money. The owners will make less money this year, but they'll both make money and play on. But it's not just a matter of the players want to be greedy here. The owners have been hiding some stuff on the books. At least the players have been saying this. The Players Association has been saying this for a number of years. They feel like that the monies aren't fully accounted in the revenue streams, and so. That said, that's a lot of inside baseball now. The big thrust here is when they come to an agreement, then we'll see an announcement about the resumption of spring training, and then, you know, hopefully a baseball season that can start in early July.
Sounds good. Well, Chris, that's a lot of information that we put out there today. Of course, the big news is that Virginia is moving towards that phase one reopening on Friday, May 15th. We are getting closer and closer to that as we close this Monday business day. Anything else that you wanted to add before we wrap up today?
Well, I don't know that we emphasize, you know, as we were talking, because we're not in Northern Virginia. We're in Western Virginia, Western Virginia, whatever we want to call it. There was talk, though, from the governor. You might have mentioned this, Crystal, but I don't think we talk about it too much here. I just wanted to say that there are the five Northern Virginia localities ringing the Washington, D.C. area. Alexandria, Arlington, Fairfax, that's three, Prince William, and there's a fifth. They have asked the governor for permission to more slowly go into this phase one and get through phase one. There still is in Northern Virginia, D.C., and the Maryland counties sort of on the northern and, kind of ringing around D.C. from their side. There is a little bit more of a prevalence of COVID-19 in that area for lots of reasons. It's a more geographically compact area, more public transit, that kind of thing. So those localities have asked the governor for permission, and he's granting permission for them to go more slowly through this phase process. What's interesting, Crystal, is for those of us in the south and west of Northern Virginia, including the Richmond and Hampton Roads areas, we've not seen the numbers that they're seeing up there in Northern Virginia, and there's been a push, in our parts of the state to say, why can't we, you know, move along a little more quickly than those counties? At first, the governor was resistant to that idea. Hey, we're a commonwealth. We need to all be on the same page. But he's definitely acceding to reality. And so Virginia is going to move at slightly different paces in terms of the return to normalcy. And so for those out there who've been following that part of the issue and maybe didn't think that we addressed that here, yes, Virginia will be moving at different paces, south and west and maybe even a little east of Northern Virginia. You'll see that we will be moving on Friday towards that first phase. The first phase will start on Friday, and we may proceed through these phases much more quickly than the Northern Virginia area. But I look at those numbers, though, Crystal, and I'm not seeing something that makes me think that Northern Virginia is going to be too far behind. you know, certainly we need to ramp testing up. The governor talked about that today. The testing, there will be more emphasis on the situation on the ground in Northern Virginia, both from a testing capacity standpoint and from other measures. But I did want to address that here, and sorry to belabor that point, but I did want to address that here just in case those who've been following that issue wanted to know more about that.
Sure. Reader Rhonda Howdyshell asked the question. She says, explain stay at home now, I guess, versus safer at home for the elderly and the ill. And I guess with this rollout that the governor has that starts on Friday, he didn't specifically address the senior population, but I think that the same guidelines still apply. And Chris, you can correct me if I'm wrong or if the governor addressed this in the news conference in any way, but the idea behind it was that if you're feeling ill, if you're not feeling well, that you should still stay at home. If you, you know, they're still recommending that you wear a face mask, even when you're visiting restaurants, when you're not eating or not drinking, they're recommending that you wear face masks. Chris, did you see anything specifically that the governor said about the senior population or for people that might be ill or, you know, or elderly?
I think you've covered it well there, Crystal. For people who are ill, stay at home. I mean, that should be the case. Honestly, we have this ethic in America that, you know, when it dates back generations, if you're sick, you go to work, you plow through it. And that's how flus, other viruses, other ailments that are communicable perpetuate. And we have the flu seasons we have some years that are really dramatic because we wear as a badge of honor that when we're sick, we go to work or we go and do things and we don't let it get us down. Well, that's got to change. And yes, in the short term, it has to change. I mean, yeah, face masks are important still. It's not like on Friday when we say you can go to outdoor restaurants at 50% capacity, you know, now just go sit right on top of people. I mean, we're still going to have social distancing in place. You still need to wear your face mask. When you can go to retail stores considered non-essential until Friday, still have some sense about you as far as that goes. Elderly, yes. The senior population, definitely. When you look at the demographic numbers, it's really sad to see. This is when I compare these numbers to flu numbers, these are very similar. This virus has particular lethality when it comes to people who are compromised in various ways, whether it be age, a combination of age and other issues, you know, other ailments you may have, other conditions that make you more vulnerable. This just like really, really bad ailments, like a really bad flu season, is really lethal when it comes to people who are compromised in various ways. So if you are someone who right now feels like, hey, I just don't know if I feel safe going out around a lot of people, Friday doesn't change that. Just because, there's now a safer at home versus a stay at home motif in place doesn't mean you have to go out and do anything. If you feel safer at home, I would say that the recommendation from the public health standpoint is continue to be safe and what's best for you. In that sense, because we have seen the numbers, over 60% of the deaths from COVID in Virginia have come in nursing home settings. And those numbers, that percentage goes up. I started tracking that number a week and a half ago. When I first started tracking it, it was 51%. Now it's 61%, actually 60.6%. So we've seen the proportion of deaths in nursing home settings go up 10 points in about a week and a half. Mm-hmm. And I think it's only going to get worse. In some states, Minnesota is close to 80%. And so I think we're going to see that our number continue to ratchet up in that direction. Not everybody, of course, who's watching this, in fact, the vast majority watching this aren't in nursing homes. But if you're someone who has health conditions that maybe make you more likely to get really sick from certain things like viruses, like a flu or pneumonia, then you still need to be careful. And maybe you need to be careful for some time, not just in a few days, but maybe for the next few months, you may need to be more aware. They're still emphasizing telework options. If your office, if your business offers telework right now and you're teleworking right now, it's still recommended that those options be left in place so that we can just do what we can to reduce the risk of people in that sense. So it's not like we're opening things wide open for people to just go back to where it was back in early March. We're still going to be very cautious as we proceed through these phases.
And I should note, too, that while that was not specifically addressed by the governor in the Safer at Home Phase 1, I think it's because it's mostly about businesses that are reopening that are addressed there. I'm sure that there are still quite a few guidelines from the CDC and that kind of thing for, you know, for long-term care facilities. And I'm sure that they are being very cautious because they know that the rates of COVID-19 have been much higher there. So just to reemphasize, the Safer at Home Phase 1 specifically related information related to restaurant and beverage services, farmers markets, brick and mortar retail stores, fitness and exercise facilities, personal care and grooming services, campgrounds and summer camps, and religious services. We didn't mention that, of course, churches have also been given the go-ahead to open up at a 50% capacity rate starting this weekend.
Indoor, yeah, which is a big part of that, too. Because we're talking about like restaurants having outdoor capacity. Actually, churches will be able to open up at 50% of their indoor capacity. Right. And as we've mentioned, I mean, this is like a sort of a social commentary, but, you know, churches are largely... I mean, I've made this observation about UVA football. UVA football has been practicing social distancing. UVA football fans have been for a number of years. We've seen over the years attendance at churches, generally speaking, declining in our society. So, but hopefully, I mean, we live. We mentioned this on the show the other day, Crystal. We live where we are on South Wayne Avenue, Waynesboro, Virginia. Literally two doors down from us, there's a big church, the local Episcopal church. There's the Baptist church is a block up. The First Presbyterian church is a block and a half up. Lutheran church right across the street from us here. Catholic church is a couple blocks up this way. We are in the middle of a lot of churches, and it's been so so weird or whatever that as we make our way around our neighborhood on weekends, not seeing those churches, not seeing the cars and not seeing the people going to churches on the weekends. So, I actually look forward to it this weekend, just seeing all the folks out and part of their church services again, because one unreported or underreported aspect to this, Crystal, is that over the last couple of months, we've lost a lot of our social ties to each other.
Right.
We had friends come this weekend and drop some things off and actually say, "Hey, stop, let's talk, let's stay 6 feet apart, but let's talk. We haven't seen you in a while." That will be a very important thing when people can get back, even at 50% capacity, even when they can get back, and be part of that social order that a church provides. We've shut our schools down for the school year. I mean, that's something that's going to be, we'll study this the next few years and see what impact that has on kids, but it's a small step, but I think a really big step that the churches will be open this weekend. And a lot of folks will benefit both from the religious standpoint, but I think even more importantly from a social standpoint, that's the case.
Right. And we were walking around the block one day over the weekend, something that we've been trying to do more regularly, just to stay active a little bit, especially for me, because you run every day. But one of the things we were talking about as we walked by one of the churches is that certainly while the governor is saying that they can be opened up, up to 50% capacity indoors starting on that May 15th date, that perhaps they'll still offer the virtual services, because whereas they may not have before, for those people who are seniors or are choosing not to go out quite yet, people who kind of want to take a little bit more of a wait and see approach on how this all goes, hopefully the virtual services will continue so that people can still tune in that don't go in person, at least, from week one or week two or week three, for some period of time. The other thing the governor's recommendations say is that if you still want to do the drive-in services, those are still recommended as well. So, while they are opening things back up for churches that choose to do so, they're giving you that that leverage to open your doors. They're still certainly encouraging other options as well. The other thing I just wanted to quickly mention, Chris, is just that if you do go to virginia.gov/coronavirus, you'll find a link to this Forward Virginia plan. And one of the things that it has is some really specific information. So if you're a restaurant It's giving you not only specific information, but also resources that you can print and display, you know, at your place. So things that, you know, whereas people might be upset at some of your practices or something like that, I think that, you know, if you have things clearly posted, then you'll know that they're coming from this order. You know, they're very specific. So, you know, if you're a restaurant, it gives you your mandatory requirements, your best practices. It gives you some additional considerations. And then the last thing is resources to print and display. And so if you're printing that, then it's going to give you things related to the CDC. It's going to give you, you know, just information, you know, that you can post throughout your establishment. So, and I thought that was really good because for every segment, whether it was farmers market or the brick and mortar retail, you know, it was giving you things that you could actually post at your place of business, whether, and even in the bathrooms, you know, proper hand washing instructions and things like that were available for you to print and display as well. So anyway, if you haven't checked that out yet and you're someone that owns a business or works at a place and you want to make sure that you have this information, it's certainly readily available on that Virginia.gov website. So, and I think it's helpful information in general, just to make sure that you're in compliance with the requirements if you are choosing, you know, to reopen or expand your business, you know, starting on Friday.
You could probably sense that you could see that I'm bemused right now. And I say that, I love that you brought that up, Crystal. And also I'm thinking about how it seems like when you look at social media, 20% of our population now is ready to tattletale on the other 80% of the population. And they're looking for the one letter of the law that you didn't follow to turn you in to the authorities and get you banned or something like that. And I, you know, hopefully we can get through this as a society and get past this you know, in lots of ways, but also can we just, can you know, those who don't want to be part of this, that's fine. I mean, and there are people who are well-meaning. There's, you know, I think the question we had from a viewer, that's a great question, you know, and if you don't feel comfortable going out, nobody's saying you have to. But if you don't want, you know, there are some people who don't want anybody to go out. All you got to do is look at when the governor has his talks on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays at 2:00 Eastern, you know, the first several comments always seem to be from people who say that the world should shut down forever. And I you know, if you think that way, that's fine. It's your right to think that way, but it's not your right to impose that on other people. And so, you know,
it's certainly everyone's choice as to whether or not they feel comfortable, you know, going to a restaurant this Friday, you know. Oh, yeah. And I know even a close friend of mine said, look, I'm probably okay with it, but I'm going to look at that places, you know, Facebook page and see what they're implementing and how many people they're going to allow and, you know, what they're doing just to make sure I feel like it's safe for me and my family. So certainly we all have that choice as to whether or not we choose to go out, you know, and partake of these businesses that are able to reopen. You know, we know the guidelines now for personal grooming and that kind of thing. So do we want to get our hair done now or wait till the next phase? You know, certainly I think that a lot of people are glad that things are starting to move and, you know, it's a very cautious approach. And I, for one, actually appreciate seeing the information, you know, related to restaurants and things like that. Not because I intend to tattle on anyone, but it makes me feel very confident that, you know, these stricter cleanliness things are going to be put into effect when I visit an establishment. And I do know that there are those people out there that, like you said, that tattletale mentality, because the other aspect of this, and we've talked about this a little bit off the air, Chris, is just the fact that, you know, law enforcement has to enforce it. You know, if somebody is doing something wrong and has to be willing to shut down businesses. And I don't imagine that anybody's going to do anything so egregious, you know, in our region that it's going to require businesses to be shut down. But certainly I'm sure that there's an eye being kept on things. And, you know, there's certainly going to be people reporting things that they feel like aren't in line with what the governor is recommending. So, you know, every time, even when we've gone into Lowe's or Home Depot or, you know, Walmart, you know, over these past few weeks, Kroger, you know, it seems like there's a lot of people in there. And yet, you know, I don't think I've ever gotten to a point where I've personally felt unsafe, but everyone has to take into account their own, you know, how they feel about this virus and the numbers and their family and their safety. And they have to make their own decisions, you know, going forward. All the governor can do is give us the guidelines as to what he feels like is appropriate at this phase. And I feel like this phase one is a good step.
I will tell you that I'm a data person. People who read Augusta Free Press regularly, especially the pieces I produce, know that. I usually, for however you want to assign this, I either spend way too much time on sports or I spend an appropriate amount of time on sports. But when I write about sports, I'm a data person. Google mobility data, Apple mobility data will tell you that the first few weeks of the lockdowns, we were, as a society, we were very cognizant of the rules and we played by the rules. The last two or three weeks, when you look at the Google mobility data, the Apple mobility data, and this is data that comes from the fact that we don't opt out of stuff on our phones and now they can track us. And that's another issue for another day. But that those data points tell us that whether or not the lockdowns have officially ended, and in Virginia, they won't until Friday, they have already ended. I mean, our mobility, our interactivity in the world at large is almost entirely back to where it was before the lockdowns were put into place. And so really all we're seeing from governments is an accession to reality. I'm just telling you this to tell you for this reason, if you're worried that things are going to get out of control in the wrong direction, they certainly can. I'm not a health person to be able to tell you what we're seeing is not going to happen. I don't want to say that and then it be brought back to me weeks later and say, oh, you were wrong. But I will tell you that the mobility data tells us we're already interacting a lot more regularly like we did 2 months ago. And we're not seeing spikes in numbers. In fact, we're seeing the numbers come down. These are good things. I'm not telling you anything that's not already, that you don't already know from intuitive what you've seen in the world. And anecdotally, Crystal, you and I this weekend, when we were out shopping, which I had not done for weeks, in the last week we've done that. The cars on the road look like it was like the situation was back in early March. The situation in stores looks like it was back in early March. The only difference is we're wearing masks on our face when we weren't back then. In some places you have to go in lines and wait outside the store in some cases before you get in. Everything else though is very similar. So these are good things. We've already kind of practiced. We've got a test run for what the next phase of normal is. It's almost like we're calling Friday phase one. We've been in phase one for a couple of weeks. Friday's really almost phase two. And so these are good things. And so I would tell you that, we're proceeding with caution, but we've been proceeding with caution for a while. And hopefully we're going to get through this in the way that I think we already know we're going to in a sense. And so again, though, if you're someone who feels like, you feel more confident and comfortable and safe, not getting back out there, nobody's making you. Continue doing what you're doing to keep yourself safe and do what's best for you. And some people are going to feel like, hey, I can't wait to go to a restaurant on Friday and I'm already ready to go at lunch and ready to go for dinner and ready to do lots of things, get my hair groomed and everything. I want to do it all Friday. I want to be the freest person in the world on Friday. If that's what makes you happy, do that too. But it's really just a matter of what you feel comfortable with, but also be responsible and be safe for yourself.
All right. Sounds good. Well, without anything else to add there for Augusta Free Press, I'm Crystal Graham. Chris Graham, thanks for your insight today. Hope everyone has a great day. And we'll likely be back on Wednesday with another update after the governor's address at 2 p.m. Have a great day, everybody.